you know, this concept of landing a spaceship in a community and expecting it to gel is clearly wrong. Anchoring yourself in the community, I think, is what I would describe as a successful development. We believe, you know, that you can do well and do good.
Joining me in the EG podcast studio via the medium of Skype this morning is Matthew Weiner, who is Chief Executive of U&I. And we are talking today because U&I this morning announced that they are launching a new scheme to ensure that public-private partnership schemes work for the benefit of all. So to do that, you guys have established an independent community challenge panel to help ensure that the best practice and help with the reputational challenges there are around PPP are addressed. So maybe, Matthew, we can start with the why and the what. So what is the issue around PPP and why you felt the need to establish this panel?
Thanks, Sam. Good morning. I think, look, there's a feeling that PPP's reputation needs to be improved. They face increased scrutiny, and that's something to do with as a result of them being mistrusted or misunderstood. I'm not sure entirely which. You know, controversies earlier in the year over the Haringey development vehicle, which, you know, was so controversial that the council leader felt she had to stand down, demonstrates quite powerfully. And also, I think PPP quite often gets confused, certainly outside our industry, with private finance initiatives and other public sector outsourcing. And again, the collapse of Carillion earlier this year probably highlighted that to the public's view. And it's difficult, if you're not an expert in this area, to distinguish between the two. I think, you know, Philip Hammond abandoning PFI as a mechanism for delivering in partnership in the budget is quite helpful in distinguishing between the two. But there's definitely some degree of mistrust and misunderstanding about what PPP actually is. Now, you know, we're very strong believers in PPP, and actually we would argue there's never been a more pressing need for PPP. Our cities face more challenges than ever before. Primarily, there's an urgent need for housing. And that's at a time when public sector finances are under strain, and when local authorities have got reduced resources and therefore need to sweat the assets that they have, of which land is one and probably their principal asset, more than ever to deliver for their communities. You know, there's this stat going around from the Local Government Association that between 2010 and 2020, councils will have lost 60 pence out of every pound that central government had previously provided for services. That's a major pressure, and I think we'll hear some of that from the speakers that we have today at our panel. And therefore, you know, our view is that PPP presents this huge opportunity. 6% of all land in England and Wales is held by public bodies. That rises to about 15% in our cities and probably over 20% in London. And so the economic and social impact which can arise from sweating those assets and delivering the potential can be of huge potential to the country as well as the communities. And, you know, land has to be used more than 9 to 5 because it's a scarce resource. And so the delivery of 24-hour communities comprising a mix of uses must be the objective to get productivity back into how we use our land. So that's sort of the context as to what we were interested in. And as you know, we're particularly curious as a business. And so we go around and we talk to people. And we held this public consultation, three public consultations, one in London, one in Manchester, and one in Birmingham. And we talked to lots of people. We followed that with interviews and polling to try and get a baseline. And I think that reinforced our view that there's a general recognition and need that use of public sector land is a good thing, but there's a general mistrust of the concept or term of the public sector and the private sector working in partnership. And I think some of that's ideological, that only the public sector can produce things of socioeconomic value, and anything that's commercial has sort of some sort of stench or whiff of impropriety about it. And, you know, quite frankly, that we don't believe in that. We believe, you know, that you can do well and do good, and that socioeconomic value and long-term sustainable returns, in our case to our shareholders, are not mutually exclusive, nor is quality and profit.
Why do you think there is that misunderstanding? Because you're right. On the way into work this morning, I was talking with my partner, saying, "Oh, I'm going to be talking about this and some new initiative around PPP, and he was like, oh, well, it's just, the NHS and local authorities get screwed over with those, don't they? And I had to say, I think you're confusing that with PFI. but you're right, it is out there, and there is this, I don't know if it's from lack of communication or maybe the industry and local government aren't very clear around what PPP actually stands for. Maybe it needs a different name. But what do you think are the main reasons for that confusion?
Well, I think to a degree, the public are right to be cynical of developers. A lot of people within the industry or have effectively, treated public consultation in particular with a degree of contempt. You know, they'll have a public consultation, put up some boards, and then the following day submit a planning application. Mm. And that's simply, right to be cynical about, therefore, the true motive of any form of engagement. But I think the missing piece between that engagement and between the recognition that there's a need and this mistrust is about engagement and bringing the community along. And I think one of the things that came out of this consultation work, which, was not only with sector, was with our peers, other developers and civic society and community, and included groups that have objected to planning applications, so that we really could see the complete viewpoint across the industry, was about lack of engagement and a lack of identifying early on who the people who are most affected by development are and trying to bring them along with them. And, we talk a lot about engagement and worthwhile use being as a mechanism in the sort of pre-planning stage about bringing the community into your site and understanding your proposals rather than putting up hoarding and blocking them out. And I think that's probably the key piece, that people simply don't feel part of a process. They feel something's being done to them. And I think developers are guilty there. I think the public sector are guilty there. Quite often decisions are made in behind closed doors in the view of voters by their politicians, and then they're presented something that they don't feel they're part of. And this concept of landing a spaceship in a community and expecting it to gel is clearly wrong. People want to feel part of the process, and in fact, the local people have the biggest stake in their communities. They're the people who live there, and I think they want identity and they want to understand, and I think we have to recognize that and change the way in which we engage. And so one of the pieces that we'll come on to is to our commitments that we're going to make is about a community engagement fund that takes some of the budget that we put towards planning and give it to community groups so that they can be better represented in the engagement process.
Fantastic. So let's talk about that. So you've established a independent community challenge panel. What will that be? And so I guess within that, you do talk about the engagement fund and also a profit share arrangement. Can you talk us through the work of the panel and those two things?
So look, one of the great things about being a listed entity is that we have a clear governance structure. And we felt that it was important to build some sort of challenge panel into our governance structure. So we're going to appoint a new non-executive director who will basically evaluate our performance as a partner to the public sector and how successful our schemes have been for the local community, not just up to practical completion, but beyond that, so that we can measure the true socioeconomic impact that our schemes have had, and have we held ourselves to the account against the commitments we made at the start of that process. Now, there's a lot of work in framing the terms of reference for that, and indeed finding a non-executive director who really wants to join us on that journey. But that will then be built into our governance of our board, and we'll report to the board, and we'll publish in our annual report and accounts how we're doing against those objectives. We also would expect to have beneath that sort of corporate panel, individual project panels, which would be made up of local community groups, members of the local community groups. And it's really interesting. There's a book that I found on a review and bought a copy and read, which is called Our Towns, 100,000-mile journey into the heart of America. And why it's interesting is they went to look at the flyover cities. Lots of people fly from New York to Los Angeles and don't stop in between. And these are the areas where, supposedly Donald Trump is very popular because of the level of resentment against the system. But actually, lots of those towns have become very successful. And one of the characteristics that they found when they talked to people is that there was somebody within the town that, if you said, who makes things happen in this town, people could identify somebody. And sometimes it was a vicar, sometimes it was a headmaster. And do you know what? Occasionally it was even a real estate developer. And I think maybe there's a different attitude towards development in the States, but that local, they call it a local patriot. And I think maybe if we were transferring that into the UK, we'd need to look for a different word. But I think having that local patriot as part of that stakeholder group, somebody who is trusted by the community to do what's right for the community, I think at a local level, that's what we're looking. And then at the corporate level, we'd be looking for somebody of that type of stature that people can say, do you know what, that person is genuine and authentic in this space. Because that's what we want to be.
So a people's person that understands both sides of the coin.
Yeah, exactly right. That understands that development is difficult. It involves change, but can be good for the community. And I think that's the piece that we've got to break down. You know, we say we want to be the best regeneration company in the UK, and we have lots of discussions about what does best mean. And it obviously means different things to different audiences. But I think I've come to the point that best means somebody who was probably not a supporter of our scheme at the time that we were pushing it through and starting, but 3 years after practical completion writes me a letter and say, do you know what, you did a good job. And this development has formed part of the community and knitted into the fabric. I think that's a success. Anchoring yourself in the community, I think, is what I would describe as a successful development.
Well, that's what makes it all worthwhile, isn't it? That's the reward, that someone loves to be in the place that you've developed.
Yeah, and that's why place is an important part of it, and public realm is so important, and a mix of uses, as I said earlier. We have to learn to use land not just from 9 to 5 or 5 to 9, but for 24 hours a day.
Sure. And one of the other key findings of it was 6 months of consultation you've done, isn't it, was the need for strong leadership within local government. And we touched on earlier Haringey, and the leader there felt that she had to stand down. How confident are you that there is strong leadership within local government? And I guess, do local councils... we talked about them losing 60p in the pound in terms of funding, that they have the nous and the strength to be able to deliver on this. It's a big challenge, isn't it?
It is a big challenge. And, whilst people like me are in theory elected by my shareholders every year, that's not quite the same as facing the public scrutiny every 3 or 4 years as politicians have to do, and therefore to take a 10-year view is not always easy. But I'm encouraged actually by the quality of people, the new sort of new leadership that we're seeing. And in the suburban London boroughs, there are people who want to get on with it because they sort of realize that it's the only way to succeed. The key is that they've got to bring their communities with them along the way. And actually, in some of the places we work now, we're seeing cross-party support for some of our projects rather than it becoming a political football. Now, those are isolated incidents, but I think there's an increasing recognition that actually, as other projects deliver and they can see some of their peers delivering successful schemes and helping them get more balance into their revenue budgets, and I think there's a recognition that why can't we do that? And our sort of mantra here is that lots of places deserve to be happy places. They don't have to be in zone one. And if we can help local authorities and the public sector work through that, then that's the opportunity for us. And I think the recognition is also that they don't have the skills. Not only do they not have sometimes the financial resources, but perhaps they don't have the skills to deliver what are increasingly complex developments. And so, if you can get over that piece, I think, and you can show them a route to a successful development, then I think I'm beginning to think that there is more of a recognition and, as I say, cross-party support within local authorities.
Excellent. And now, UNI has a reputation of being a forward-thinking developer. You have been awarded by us at the very least for the work that you do around communities and engagement, and you've got your wonderful worthwhile use that I'm a big fan of. How do you make this something that isn't just a you and I thing? How do you engage with other developers around making PPP not a dirty word?
I think all we can do is be thought leaders in this space and produce reports like we produced today and lead by example. It's not going to be for everybody within the industry. Quite often I get challenges from my peers about, can you not do this, please? But actually, this isn't going to go away as an issue. To think that we're going to revert to something whereby, you know, all you have to do is put a red line on a plan, put it into a local authority with three pages of supporting reports, and you'll get your planning consent. That's just not going to happen. And so I think all we can do is provide thought leadership, encourage a debate, and deliver on the commitments that we're making today. If those community challenge panels, community profit share and a community engagement fund, if those become recognized by our public sector partners as good things, then they'll start to put the pressure on our peers to say, well, why aren't you doing this? And look, we don't have all the answers. I'm sure there are refinements to be made to what we've done, but all we're doing is saying, let's lead a debate and be part of a debate, because it's too important for UK PLC not to. And, you know, discussion and talk is the first part, actions are the second part, and that's why we're keen to sort of hold ourselves to account as a business, and hope that others can join in and say, well, you know what, that's what we should be doing.
And as you and I, you also talk a lot about purpose. I see that word a lot. Can you tell us a little bit more about what that means and why and how that's important when trying to change the perception of public-private partnerships?
Wow, that's a good question. because all you have really in the long term is your purpose, your culture and your values. Projects come and go, people come and go. But what we have to do is create a culture and a purpose within the business that the person who succeeds me and the person who succeeds that person have the same ideology and values and drive forward. That's all we have. Otherwise, we're just a series of projects sort of loosely stitched together under a name. And so to really get talent focused on delivering great results, they need to have and feel a purpose. And our purpose is about testing. You can call it lots of things. You can call it quality and profit, because I think the industry would understand that best. There's a lot of people who would say, well, if you deliver a quality scheme, it can't be as profitable. We would obviously refute that and say the two are self-reinforcing. You can call it chaos and order if you want to. A little bit of chaos. Chaos is one of those words that people don't tend to like, but actually chaos is good in well-controlled manner, because it encourages creativity. And so by having a purpose that says, you know, shorthand, do well, do good, or longhand, socioeconomic value for the communities in which we develop and sustainable returns to our shareholders, by testing that each and every day, we're showing that there's a purpose to what we achieve. And certainly if you want to attract talent, you have to have a clear purpose.
So you're releasing a report from all your findings from the consultation today that sets out as well what you propose to do, how you're going to take those findings mm-hmm. forward. If people want to have a read of that or get their hands on it, what should they do?
It'll be on our website. I'm sure you'll be able to find it very quickly on our website. We're good, as you know, at making sure our
Chang off.
I think that's a little harsh. This is thought leadership. There's two pictures of our schemes, but not a lot. It's mainly about what we did and what we asked. But our website would be the place to go, which is www.uni.com.
Fantastic. Well, Matthew, best of luck with it all. Keep us in the loop. Be very, very keen to follow you on your, I think it will be quite a tough journey, but exciting journey to find a non-executive director and to change the attitudes towards PPP.
Thank you, Sam. And just to say, you know, we are always, and this week in particular, the collaborators supplement that you guys had in the magazine, I think some of the articles in there point to this direction of travel and are encouraging that others are thinking the same way as we are. So I think the EG do a great job in this space. Thank you.
Well, thank you. We couldn't do it without all of you guys actually doing the hard work out there. So thanks for that. And thank you for joining us in the EG podcast studio.